Sue Brown had come to Blandings impersonating the American heiress, Miss Schoonmaker. She had been welcomed by Lady Constance and was now being taken round the Rose Garden by the Honourable Galahad, who told her that he'd known her father, old Johnny Schoonmaker, 25 years ago.
"Well, that's what it is, you see," he said as they emerged, waving a hand vaguely. "Roses and, roses, all that sort of thing. You get the idea. And now, if you don't mind, I ought to be getting back. It slipped my mind, but I'm expecting a man to call to see me at any moment on some rather important business."
Sue was glad of the opportunity of being left alone. Besides, Ronnie was somewhere out in those grounds. At any moment, if she went wandering through them, she might come upon him. And then she told herself all would be well. Her companion, she found, was still talking.
"He wants to see me about a play. This book of mine is going to make a stir, you see, and he thinks that if he can get me to put my name to the play..."
Sue's thoughts wandered again. She gathered that the caller he was expecting had to do with the theatrical industry, and wondered for a moment if it was anyone she'd ever heard of. She was not sufficiently interested to make inquiries. She was too busy thinking of Ronnie. "I shall be quite happy," she said, "just wandering by myself." The Aunt Galahad seemed shocked at the idea.
"Wouldn't dream of leaving you alone. Clarence will look after you, and I shall be back in a few minutes. Hi, Clarence," called the Aunt Galahad.
Sue perceived, pottering towards them, a long, stringy man of mild and benevolent aspect. "Is that Lord Emsworth?" she asked, surprised.
"Yes. Clarence, this is Miss Schoonmaker."
His lordship had potted up and was beaming amiably.
"Is it indeed? Oh, ah, yes, to be sure. Delighted. How are you? How are you?"
"Miss who?"
"Schoonmaker. Daughter of my old friend Johnny Schoonmaker. You knew she was arriving." "Oh, yes, yes."
The cloud was passing from what, for want of a better word, must be called Lord Emsworth's mind.
"Yes, yes, 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 to be sure. I've got to leave you to look after her for a few minutes, Clarence." "Certainly, certainly, certainly. Take her about and show her things. I wouldn't go too far from the house if I were you. There's a storm coming up."
"Oh, exactly, precisely. Yes, I will, I'll take her about and, show her things. You fond of pigs?"
"Oh, yes, very."
"Oh, mine's been stolen."
"Oh, I'm so sorry." Lord Emsworth was visibly pleased at this womanly sympathy.
"But I now have strong hopes that she may be recovered. The trained mind is everything. What I always say..."
What it was that Lord Emsworth always said was unfortunately destined to remain unrevealed. For at this moment there came from above, from the direction of the window of the small library, an odd scrambling sound. Something shot through the air. And the next instant there appeared in the middle of a flower bed containing lobelias something that was so manifestly not a lobelia that he stared at it in stunned amazement. Speech wiped from his lips as with a sponge. It was the efficient Baxter. He was on all fours and seemed to be groping about for his spectacles, which had fallen off and got hidden in the undergrowth. It may seem puzzling at first sight when ex-secretaries start falling as the gentle rain from heaven upon the lobelias beneath, but there is always a reason for it. That Baxter did not immediately give a reason was due to the fact that he had a private and personal motive for not doing so. We have called Rupert Baxter efficient, and efficient he was. It had been with him the work of a moment to perceive, directly the Honourable Galahad had left the house with Sue, that here was his chance of popping upstairs, nipping into the small library, and abstracting the manuscript of the reminiscences. Having popped and nipped as planned, he was in the very act of searching the desk when the sound of footsteps outside froze him from his spectacles to the soles of his feet. The next moment, fingers began to turn the door handle. With one masterful, lightning-like flash of clear thinking, he took in the situation and saw the only possible way out. The window was at his elbow. So he jumped out of it. All these things Baxter could have explained in a few words. Refraining from doing so, he rose to his feet and began to brush the mould from his knees.
"Baxter! What on earth?"
The ex-secretary found the gaze of his late employer trying to nerves which had been considerably shaken by his fall. "I overbalanced," he said curtly.
"Overbalanced?"
"Slipped."
"Slipped?"
"Yes, slipped."
"How? Where?"
"I was leaning out of the library window." "I think I'll go indoors and wash my hands," he said.
"And your face,"
suggested the Aunt Galahad. "My face also," said Rupert Baxter coldly. He started to move round the angle of the house, but long before he'd got out of hearing, Lord Emsworth's high and penetrating tenor was dealing with the situation.
"Mad as a coot,"
he said. With flushed ears and glowing spectacles, the efficient Baxter passed on his way. Lord Emsworth continued to gaze at the spot where his late secretary had passed from sight.
"Mad as a coot," he repeated.
"Madder,"
said the on Galahad.
"Upon my word, I think he's actually worse than he was 2 years ago. Then at least he never fell out of windows."
"Why on earth do you have the fella here?"
"It's Constance, my dear Galahad. You know what she is. She insisted on inviting him."
"Well, if you take my advice, you'll hide the flower pots."
"One of the things this fella does when he gets these attacks,"
explained the on Galahad, taking Sue into the family confidence,
"is to go about hurling flower pots at people."
"Really?"
"I assure you. Ah, looking for me, Beach?"
The careworn figure of the butler had appeared.
"Yes, sir. The gentleman has arrived, Mr. Galahad. I looked in the small library, thinking you might possibly be there, but you were not."
"No, I was out here."
"Yes, sir."
"That's why you couldn't find me. Show him up to the small library, Beach, and tell him I'll be with him in a moment."
"Very good, sir."
The on Galahad's temporary delay in going to see his visitor was due to his desire to linger long enough to tell Sue what every girl ought to know about the efficient Baxter.
"Never let yourself be alone with that fella in a deserted spot, my dear,"
he counselled.
"If he suggests a walk in the woods, call for help. Been off his head for years. Look after Miss Shoemaker, Clarence. I shan't be long."
Lord Emsworth had little experience in the art of providing diversion for young girls.
"Well, perhaps you'd get to see the rose garden,"
he hazarded. "I should love to," said Sue.
"Fond of roses?"
"Tremendously." Lord Emsworth found himself warming to this girl. He seemed dimly to recall something his sister Constance has said about her, something about wishing that her nephew Ronald would settle down with some nice girl with money, like that Miss Shoemaker whom Julia had met in Biarritz. Feeling so kindly towards her, it occurred to him that a word in season, opening her eyes to his nephew's true character, might prevent the girl making a mistake which she would regret forever when it was too late.
"Think you know my nephew, Ronald?"
"Yes."
"That boy's an ass," he said.
"Why?" said Sue sharply.
"Why?"
His lordship considered the point.
Well, heredity, probably, I should say. His father, old Miles Fish, was the biggest fool in the Brigade of Guards. The boy bounces tennis balls on pigs."
"Does what?"
"I saw him with my own eyes. He bounced a tennis ball on the Empress of Blandings, and not once, but repeatedly."
They left the rose garden and began to walk back to the lawn.
"Aggravating boy," he said. "Most aggravating. Always up to something or other. Something about Ronald reminds me very much of Galahad at the same age."
"Oh, I don't agree with you, Lord Emsworth."
"But you never knew my brother Galahad as a young man,"
his lordship pointed out cleverly. "What is the name of that hill over there?" asked Sue, in a cold voice, changing the unpleasant subject.
"That hill? Oh, that one. It's called the Wrekin."
"Oh," said Sue.
"Yes,"
said Lord Emsworth. "Ah," said Sue. Lord Emsworth was finding his companion unresponsive. His stream of prattle slackened and died away. He began to wonder how he was to escape from a girl who, though undeniably pleasing to the eye, was proving singularly difficult to talk to. Raking the horizon in search of aid, he perceived Beach approaching, a silver salver in his hand. The salver had a card on it and an envelope.
"For me, Beach?"
"The card, your lordship."
"The gentleman is in the hall."
Lord Emsworth breathed a sigh of relief.
"You will excuse me, my dear. It's most important that I should see this fellow immediately."
He bustled away, glad to go, and Sue became conscious of the salver thrust deferentially towards her.
"For you, miss."
"For me?"
"Yes, miss," moaned Beach, like a winter wind wailing through the dead trees.
He inclined his head somberly and was gone. Sue tore open the envelope. For one breathtaking instant, she thought it might be from Ronnie. But the writing was not Ronnie's familiar scrawl. It was bold, clear, decisive writing. The writing of an efficient man. She looked at the last page. "Yours sincerely, R. J. Baxter." Sue's heart was beating faster as she turned back to the beginning. "Dear Miss Shoemaker," wrote the efficient Baxter, "at the risk of annoying you by the intrusion of my private affairs, I feel that I must give you an explanation of the incident which occurred in the garden in your presence this afternoon. From the observation, in the grossest taste, which Lord Emsworth let fall in my hearing, I fear you may have placed a wrong construction on what took place. I allude to the expression, mad as a coot, which I distinctly heard Lord Emsworth utter as I moved away. The facts were precisely as I stated. I was leaning out of the library window, and chancing to lean too far, I lost my balance and fell. That I might have received serious injuries and was entitled to expect sympathy, I overlook. But the words, mad as a coot, I resent extremely. Had this incident not occurred, I would not have dreamed of saying anything to prejudice you against your host. As it is, I feel that in justice to myself, I must tell you that Lord Emsworth is a man to whose utterances no attention should be paid. He is, to all intents and purposes, half-witted. His relatives look on him as virtually an imbecile, and have, in my opinion, every cause to do so. In these circumstances, I think I may rely on you to attach no importance to his remarks this afternoon. Yours sincerely, R. Baxter. P.S. You will, of course, treat this as entirely confidential. P.P.S. If you are fond of chess and would care for a game after dinner, I am a good player. P.P.S.S. Or Bezique. Sue thought it a good letter, neat and well expressed. Why it had been written, she could not imagine. It had not occurred to her that love, or at any rate a human desire to marry a wealthy heiress, had begun to burgeon in R.J. Baxter's bosom.
All alone?
She turned, her heart beating quickly. The voice, speaking close behind her, had had something of the effect of a douche of iced water down her back. It was the Honourable Galahad, back from his interview with the gentleman, and the sight of him did nothing to calm her agitation. He was eyeing her, she thought, with a strange and sinister intentness.
"You know," said the Honourable Galahad, "it's been a great treat to me, meeting you, my dear. I haven't seen any of your people for a number of years, but your father and I correspond pretty regularly. He tells me all the news. Did you leave your family well?"
"Quite well."
"How was your Aunt Edna?"
"Fine," said Sue feebly.
"Ah," said the Hon. Galahad. "Then your father must have been mistaken when he told me she was dead. But perhaps you thought I meant your Aunt Edith."
Yes, said Sue gratefully.
"She's all right, I hope."
Oh, yes.
"What a lovely woman."
"Yes."
"You mean she still is?"
"Oh, yes."
"Oh, remarkable. She must be well over 70 by now." "No doubt you mean beautiful, considering she's over 70.
"Yes."
"Pretty active?"
"Oh, yes."
"When did you last see her?"
Just before I sailed.
"And you say she's active. Curious. I heard 2 years ago that she was paralyzed."
"I suppose you mean active for a paralytic."
The little puckers at the corner of his eyes deepened into wrinkles. He smiled genially.
"Confide in me, Miss Brown," he said. "What's the game?"